Chapter 18. It's half a league's walking over brambles that scratch and cut our legs to get to the gypsy camp. The nights are turning colder now. The damp air is raw. It hurts my lungs on the way in, and it comes out of my mouth in short white puffs of mist. By the time we reach the edge of their camp, take in the tents and the campfire, the large wooden wagons, and the men playing boxy violins, my sides ache from the effort. There are three large dogs sitting on the ground. How we'll get past them, I don't know.
"Now what?"
Anne whispers between gulps for air. The women are off in their own tents. A few children mill about. Five young men sit drinking around the fire, trading stories in a tongue we can't understand. One of the men tells a joke. His friends clap and laugh. The sound, low and guttural, creeps into my insides in a way that makes me feel like running for safety, or running till I'm caught. To face what, I'm uncertain. My mind doesn't reach that far. It's all enough to send my heart to hammering. One of the men is Ita. In the firelight, his strange gold eyes dance. I catch Felicity's eye, nod in his direction to show he's there. Anne catches on, looks around, scared.
"What is it?"
"A change of plans. We'll have to come back tomorrow, during the day." Anne objects.
"But you said..."
I turn to leave, but my foot breaks a twig with a loud crack. The dogs bark wildly. Ital is up with his dagger, alert as any feral thing is. Using their native tongue, he shushes his friends. Now they too are coiled, ready to strike.
"Bravo,"
Felicity snaps.
"Don't blame me. Take it up with the forest," I hiss.
Ital holds up a finger to his comrades. He calls out in English,
"Who's there?"
"We're done for,"
Anne whispers, petrified.
"Not quite," Felicity says.
She stands up straight and steps out from behind the tree while we try to pull her back down.
"What are you doing?"
Anne says in a loud, panicked whisper. Felicity ignores us. She walks out toward them, an apparition in white and blue velvet, her head held high as they stare in awe at her, the goddess. I don't know yet what power feels like, but this is surely what it looks like, and I think I'm beginning to understand why those ancient women had to hide in caves, why our parents and teachers and suitors want us to behave properly and predictably. It's not that they want to protect us, it's that they fear us. Ital breaks into a lascivious grin. He bows to her. When he spies us hiding behind the tree like it's our mother's apron, he whistles sweetly to us, but the wolfish grin's still there. I want to run all the way back to Spence, but I can't leave Felicity here, and the men might come after me into the deep cover of the woods. Taking Anne's clammy hand in mine, I walk tall into that towering circle of men as it closes around the three of us.
"I knew you could not stay away,"
Ital says teasingly to Felicity.
"You knew nothing of the sort. As I recall, I left you standing on the other side of the wall the other day. That's where you'll always belong, on the other side of things."
She's mocking him. It doesn't seem a wise course, but I've never found myself surrounded by virile gypsy men in the middle of the night woods before. I'm in no position to advise or argue. I can only hold my breath and wait. Ital steps closer, toys with the cape's ribbon at the hollow of Felicity's throat. His voice is boisterous, laughing, but the smile doesn't travel to his eyes. They are wounded and angry.
"I'm not on that side of the wall tonight."
"Please,"
Anne croaks.
"We've only come to see Mother Elena."
"Mother is not here right now,"
one of the men says. He's not much older than a boy, really. Maybe 15, with a nose he hasn't grown into quite yet. If we have to make a run for it, he's the one I'm kicking first.
"I demand to see Mother Elena,"
Felicity says, cool and sure. I'm the only one who can see how truly scared she is, and her fear frightens me more than the situation at hand.
How did we get into this mess? And how do we get out?
What's going on?
Kartik strolls into the thick of things in his borrowed gypsy disguise, a battered cricket bat in one hand. His eyes go wide when he sees me.
Please, we need to see Mother Elena, I say, hoping I don't sound as terrified as I feel.
Ital holds his hands up, exposing the thick calluses that crisscross his palms, a memento of a harsh life lived out of doors.
Ah, this gadji is yours. I apologize, friend.
Kartik scoffs.
She is not...
He stops himself.
Yes, she is mine.
He grabs my hand and pulls me out of the circle. A chorus of whistles and cheers follow us. Another hand snakes around my free wrist. It's attached to the boy with the big nose I spied earlier.
How do we know she's yours? She does not seem so willing, he teases. Perhaps she will come with me instead.
Kartik hesitates. It's long enough for a small laugh of suspicion to ripple through the men. The other man's grip on my arm is strong, and I can taste fear, cold and metallic, in my mouth. There's no time to be modest. Reason will not work here. Without warning, I kiss Kartik. His lips, pressed firmly against mine, are a surprise. They're warm, light as breath, firm as the give of a peach against my mouth. A scent like scorched cinnamon hangs in the air, but I'm not falling into any vision. It's his smell in me, a smell that makes my stomach drop through my feet, a smell that pushes all thought out of my head and replaces it with an overpowering hunger for more. Kartik's tongue slips between my lips for a second, jarring me. I push away, gasping, my face gone blood red. I can't look at anyone, especially not Felicity and Anne. What must they think of me now? What would they think if they knew how much I'd enjoyed it? What kind of girl am I to enjoy a kiss I've seized so boldly without waiting to have it asked and taken from me the way I should? A burly man in back booms out laughing.
I see she is yours after all.
Yes, Kartik croaks. I'll take them to Mother Elena to have their fortunes told. Get back to drinking. It's their money we need, not their trouble.
Kartik escorts us to Mother Elena's tent. Along the way, Felicity glances back, taking in the sight of Kartik beside me. Her eyes dart from me to him and back again. I make my face a stone, and finally she faces forward. Kartik opens the flap for Felicity and Anne, but pulls me sharply aside.
Just what do you think you're doing here?
Having my fortune told, I say.
It's a stupid thing to say, but my lips are still warm from his kiss, and I'm too embarrassed to come up with something clever to say.
I apologize for my conduct. I barely manage. It was necessary under the circumstances. I hope you won't think me too forward.
He grabs an acorn from the ground, tosses it into the air, and whacks at it with the cricket bat. The bat is so old and split it's largely ineffectual. His mouth is set in a tight line.
I'll never hear the end of it from them later.
The tingling in my stomach goes cold.
Sorry to have put you out on my behalf, I say.
He says nothing, and I'm so humiliated I wish I could disappear on the spot.
Where's the other one of your little foursome? Hiding in the woods?
It takes me a second to realize he means Pippa. I remember the way he looked at her in the woods. He obviously hasn't stopped thinking of her. It's the first real kindness he's shown, and it's surprising how much it stings.
She's ill, I say irritably.
Nothing serious, I hope.
I don't know why I feel so wounded by Kartik's obvious infatuation with Pippa. There's no romance between us. There's nothing that tethers us but this dark secret neither of us wants. It's not Kartik's longing that hurts. It's my own. It's knowing that I'll never have what she has, a beauty so powerful it brings things to you. I fear I will always have to chase the things I want. I'll always have to wonder if I'm truly wanted or if I've just been settled for.
Nothing serious, I say, swallowing hard. May I go in now? I go to lift the flap, but his hand grips my wrist.
Do not do this again,
he warns, pushing me inside the tent while he walks off toward the forest to become the night's eyes, always watching me.